It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the Defense Department announced plans today to cut the U.S. Army to its smallest size since before World War II. We'll get more details about that plan after 5:30.
But first, a reporter from the Gannett, Wisconsin Media Investigative Team is giving us a preview of their series on Native American casinos. Yesterday, Gannett Papers posted the first part of its seven-part series called Doubling Down, the Great Divide in Indian Gaming.
Native American casinos are a huge part of Wisconsin's culture and economy, especially for tribes. The topic is more timely now as Governor Scott Walker continues to weigh the Menominee tribe's plan to open a new casino in Kenosha. Here to talk about the series and what they found is Katie Foody. She's a reporter for Gannett, Wisconsin Media Investigative Team. Katie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Well, as I mentioned, the timing of this is pretty good with the controversy over that casino in Kenosha, but you've had this in the works for a while. Why did your team decide to take a closer look at these casinos?
You know, it came where I think many stories come from. An editor in Wausau had visited a casino and realized how much the industry had changed since the last time he had been there. So that's really what got us rolling, and then we realized, you know, we had really hit this benchmark of about 25 years since gaming really got started nationally, and maybe a little bit more than that for Wisconsin, because it was happening here already sort of as a traditional and fundraising mechanism for many tribes.
Well, if you can, give us a taste of what kind of angles you're covering in this series, and we'll delve a little deeper into them as we go along.
Yeah, I think the story that we posted yesterday really gives you a good overview of the difference that this has made for tribes in general. I don't think anyone can tell you that life for them is the same as it was before gaming got started. We are talking about millions of dollars, even for tribes that aren't as successful as some of the most successful tribes that we found. But there is a definite disparity. You know, some are able to bring in around $4 million, $5 million that they then put into their government operations, and others are making more than $200 million. So it's quite a difference, and you can really see that in the services and other things that they're able to offer to their members.
Well, let's follow that, actually. Tell us about the two tribes you compared. Both came out of poverty, as you wrote, but to very differing degrees. Paint us a picture of what life looks like on the two, with the two tribes that you looked at.
We took a look yesterday at the Menominee tribe, who obviously have been in the news quite a bit because of their Kenosha proposal, and the Oneida Nation. There is about 35 miles, I think, separating them, but you can really see the difference in what that has meant for them. Location is such an important factor when you're talking about an industry that depends on foot traffic, and the Oneidas being in Green Bay, very close to Lambeau and right across the street from the airport there, has definitely made a difference for them. You know, they're bringing in more than $100 million that they're able to put into government services versus the Menominee, who last year were able to put about $8 million toward government services. Some of the things we're going to get into is the healthcare services that they're able to offer. The Oneida, for example, have a facility that's about 10 years old. You know, all the latest equipment, and the Menominee are doing okay, but, you know, they certainly have disadvantages. They're clinic has been able to grow over time, but one example that their health administrator gave me was that they just got a pill counting machine, and it's a very simple piece of equipment, but they got it about 5 years later than everyone else just because of the resource issue.
How quickly did, you mentioned it's about a 25-year benchmark, how quickly did the casinos spring up around the state?
They were not what we think of as casinos. You know, most of them were bingo halls to start out with, maybe one room, often very temporary structures that have hung on and hung around. Many of them still exist, and they're used kind of as auxiliary buildings at existing casinos. But it did happen very quickly because tribes looked at this as really a savior for them. Once the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act was passed, they knew that they were now required to work with the state to negotiate compacts. So there was kind of a gray period where casinos were being operated before those compacts were signed. One tribe official at the time said that their attorney said, well, if they, you know, if they come in and arrest you, then I promise I'll get you out, basically. So it was definitely an uncertain time for everyone involved.
What was life like for people of these tribes before the money started coming in from the casinos?
What we heard is that it was basically focused on just getting by. There was a lot of dependence on hunting, gathering, all, you know, really things that you could do for free, and kind of living off the land that was granted in these trust agreements to provide tribes with reservations. The Menominee, for example, several members told us that the entire area didn't have electricity until the 90s. So really things that were taken for granted in the rest of the state, they were still struggling to provide and then keep up. You know, housing definitely has improved as federal and state aid has increased and just been better used, too. I think tribe members would say that they've learned a lot in the last 25 years as well about kind of the best things that they can do to provide for members, even when resources are short.
When we look at a tribal budget, how big a role does money from casinos play?
We found that it still plays an enormous role. Menominee, for example, get at least 3/4 of their governing budget from gaming. Even a tribe like the Forest County Potawatomi, who really do have the most diverse kind of business portfolio of the tribes that we looked at, are still getting about 80% of their government revenue from gaming operations. And there's no denying from tribe officials and members that they're continuing to work at that. But, you know, opening a business is not going to be as immediately profitable as opening a casino was. So there is a little bit of an expectation adjustment that members are having to make, and they also want to be safe with their, you know, basically tax dollars. That's what they have at their fingertips to use, so they want to make sure that ventures tribe officials are pursuing are going to pan out.
Is there a worry, though, that there are too many eggs in that one basket, that if something in the economy changes, if more competition opens up, that they'll be back where they were before casinos or closer to that?
I think there's some confidence among tribe members that you could take gaming away or minimize it, and they would find a way to get by. But, you know, we heard from one member that he's hoping that doesn't happen in his lifetime because he'd be the one trying to figure out how to fill that hole. But it's definitely an industry that has a lot of question marks, and one of our stories focuses on that, especially what online gaming could mean. As we've talked about the Kenosha Project, what more competition as tribes pursue off-reservation casinos could mean. So I think there are still a lot of unknowns.
Is there a concern, with a new casino like the one proposed in Kenosha, that there's going to be diminishing returns? Ultimately, there are only so many people who are going to go and gamble at a casino.
Yeah, and it's a tough thing to get a handle on. One of the things I was surprised about is that most of the studies of this area and the industry as a whole are done by one side or another. You know, those that support gaming as an industry, maybe industry groups even, and groups that oppose the, you know, the entire idea or oppose expansion of gaming. So it's tough to really get a handle on exactly what will happen, but we've certainly heard from the Potawatomi and the Ho-Chunk that they believe a Kenosha casino will cut into what they're able to do at their existing facilities. And, you know, the Menominee would argue that they're trying to make every effort to minimize that.
We're talking about casinos operated by tribes here in Wisconsin with Katie Foody. She's a reporter for the Gannett, Wisconsin Media Investigative Team.
What do you think about tribal casinos in Wisconsin? We'd like to hear from you now. Do you think they're good for our state's economy? And what about the tribes in Wisconsin? Do you have questions about casinos in Wisconsin? Well, you can call now at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org.
We'll continue the conversation in just a minute right after a look at the headlines with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're picking up our conversation now about tribal casinos with Katie Foodie, reporter for the Gannett, Wisconsin Media Investigative Team.
And we want to hear from you. What do you think about tribal casinos here in the state? Do you think they're good for the state's economy? Are they good for the tribes that operate them? Why or why not? Do you have questions about Wisconsin's casinos? Give a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. We'll go to our callers now. We've got Kitty on the line with us in Milwaukee. Kitty, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up?
I wanted to say that I believe it is good for the Wisconsin and also for the tribes, because wherever there's a casino located, it draws in more tourists, so it helps the tourism economy, but it also creates a lot of jobs, not just for tribal members, but for other people living in that area locally. And I think in general, it's a boost to the economy wherever a casino is located.
Kitty, thanks for the call. Katie, I don't know if you look into that in the series, is there an effect outside the tribes into local communities?
What we heard, I think there were two tribes that were good examples of that. The Potawatomi, who have many members who live in Forest County, and also the Ho-Chunk, who Bill Leaders at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism reported on. I should mention that they partnered with us on this project. And we did hear a lot from people who work in tourism, people who work in small business and in local government, that when you have a strong tribe, which typically means that their gaming operation is strong, they help the entire area. So whether that's the Potawatomi taking part in an economic development effort for Forest County, that was really, you know, the first project of its kind, or the Ho-Chunk, who really contribute to the Wisconsin Dells tourism environment, there's certainly a local appreciation for the industry.
I wanted to hear a little more about where casino revenue ends up. You mentioned things like health clinics on various reservations. What else happens with the money? Is there, or is it not one size fits all? Different tribes do different things with the money.
Absolutely. Different tribes do different things. One of the biggest conversations that we found happening even 25 years after this industry really got started was how much to depend on direct payments to individual tribe members. You know, I heard time and time again that it's really a philosophical call, that some tribes believe it's just a new form of welfare, and you know, you're teaching people to be dependent on something rather than kind of going out and finding their own, you know, industry or something that they want to be involved in. But tribes that have used this system, including the Potawatomi, argue that that money is going back into the local economy. Members are using it to buy cars, televisions, groceries, you name it. And it's, you know, supporting the area as a whole. And we certainly heard that from business owners around those communities, too.
Who regulates these casinos? Is it the tribes themselves, the states, the feds? I have no idea how that works.
Yeah, it's really a multi-layered process, and actually is very complicated, which certainly has changed, you know, over time. For example, the tribes themselves monitor it, just like any business would. The state monitors it. They have a whole department that's in charge of auditing those tribes. Those records weren't available to us because that's an agreement between the state and the tribes that was negotiated a long time ago, that, you know, those competitive things won't be revealed, but we were able to find out a bit through federal records, and there's also the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which is really the main federal regulator, who's very involved in casino location decisions, as well as just making sure that things are running smoothly and appropriately.
We may not know the ins and outs exactly of casino budgets for the tribes, but we do know, I imagine, how much the state makes from it. How much of the state's budget comes from casino revenue?
You know, it's not a huge percentage of the state budget, but we found that over the last 10 years or so, the median amount was about $50 million. Another reporter who worked on this series with me really found that property tax relief is the biggest tie-in to this, and that's really about the state lottery. Andy Thompson's story ran today, and he was able to take a look at really how that 1987 referendum that allowed a lottery kind of allowed the casino industry to really flourish and bring us to where we are today, where we have 25 scattered around the state.
Go back to our callers now. We've got Mike with us in Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon. Before casino gambling came to Brown County and through the Oneidas, you would hear people in Brown County say, on Broadway, especially in West Green Bay, oh, those drunken Indians, they're bums, they don't do anything, they're lazy, they've got nothing, they just leech off of us, da-da-da-da. Then came the Oneida gambling, which has been very, very well regulated. If it wasn't for the Oneidas, the west side of Green Bay would look totally different economically than it does today. They provide education for their own. They contribute to the community. They've helped a number of businesses, non-Indians, grow and flourish on West Mason Street. And so those same people who are griping about the Indians, as we all get in this state, people who hate Indians, now the gripe is, oh, those Indians, they got all that money. They don't share it, da-da-da-da. Why should they have it? I'm happy for the Oneidas. Yeah. And I think if some of these tribes are having difficulty, maybe they're in an area where there's not that type of gaming, the
gotcha.
Size of it.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Is that a response that you think is common, Katie?
I think you hear a little bit of both. The Oneida are a very unique situation where they are kind of intermingled with the community. I mean, as you drive around that area, you know, one street you're on the reservation, the next you're off, because they've been able to buy back parcels as they become available. And in talking to members, they feel like that has pushed them to become part of the wider community a little bit more than maybe some other tribes that are located in rural locations. And sometimes when you have a contiguous reservation, there seems to be less need to kind of have the relationship that the Oneidas do with surrounding communities. You know, they talk a lot about the police and fire and ambulance service agreements that they've negotiated with surrounding communities and how that has really just made everyone see that there are another business interest there and that everyone's, you know, trying to do the best thing for the region as a whole.
Thanks for the call, Mike. We go now to Mike in Baraboo. Hi there, Mike.
Yes, good afternoon. Good topic. In fact, we were just discussing this here because I have a business right along Highway 12, not far from where the Ho-Chunk Casino is in Wisconsin Dells. And I was in a sort of a bidding war with a piece of property that was made available to us to actually grow the business that I currently have, and lost that piece of property to the nation, to Ho-Chunk, and who got the piece of property tax-free. They didn't pay any taxes on that property. And they don't consistently pay taxes to the level that I'm taxed. But yet, you know, I agree they probably do help their tribal members to some, you know, to some level. But they also make a substantial amount of money, and they have never been taxed appropriately to the level that myself and other business owners, and I employ about 50 employees in my business, but have never been taxed to the level that everybody else in the area has been taxed, but yet they make a profit.
There's gotcha, no Mike. I want to get a response from Katie about this. Is this a thing you hear from maybe businesses in the area of some casinos?
I think you do hear that, especially in the immediate area. You know, certainly there is the belief that things aren't quite as equitable, you know, as some people believe they should be. We heard that from some state lawmakers who said, you know, maybe we should be getting a little bit more in the compact payments. But there does also seem to be a belief that gaming is here to stay, and this is kind of the situation that we're in and need to kind of go along to get along as best as possible.
I bet if you'd asked someone 25 years ago, they wouldn't have thought that casinos would grow as quickly as they have in Wisconsin. What is, I know it's hard to answer this, but what is next? What are some of the big question marks in the future for Wisconsin casinos?
Well, you certainly have multiple tribes who are seeking the opportunity to expand. I think as many people might know, just because of the Kenosha debate, they need to get approval both from the federal government and from the governor. And Governor Walker has said that he's not going to make a decision quickly when it comes to the Kenosha proposal. But there are at least three other tribes who are pursuing opportunities like that. We can also really watch closely the online industry. We have two tribes here in Wisconsin who have joined an alliance that's really pushing for that to happen and to allow them to run online gaming just like any other business would be able to across the country. So there's a lot to watch in the coming years.
Katie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
That's Katie Foodie, reporter for the Gannett, Wisconsin Media Investigative Team. She was with us to talk about their ongoing investigative series on Wisconsin's tribal casinos.